Hello, everybody. This is Michael, and we are continuing with a treatise on white magic webinar commentaries. Maybe I should add that WC or video commentaries comes after it. Really? Okay. VC and VC. Number 11, and we have just dealt with the dense physical vehicle, and we have divided it into many parts, each of which has correspondence with one of the three major rays. So the body has been entirely divided and correlated with the higher aspects of the energy system and with the underlying rays, so we can understand the various functions of these triplicities, these triangles. And now we're going to deal with the etheric body. We began there last time and discovered that it was going to go into a section all of its own, so in that case I decided to call it short, you know, and continue on the next day. All right, get my chronometer going. The vital body is the expression of the soul energy and has the following function. I think the soul operates through the mind, and there's a correlation between the astral body and the soul, but also soul energy will come through the vital body as well as other types of energy. It unifies and links into one whole. The sum total of all forms, and these forms, shall we say, this is a very important statement, these forms all pour their energy through the vital body. It gives to every form its particular quality. And this is what he says this is due to, and just an idea here, the archetype of the form is found in the vital body and then shapes the form accordingly, or attracts densest matter onto or into an etheric scaffolding, an etheric form. So, the vital body gives every form its particular quality, and this is due to A, the type of matter drawn into that particular part of the web of life. Now, there are differing types of magnetism, dense physical matter. I think I'll make that into a DPM, dense physical body, and let's call this dense physical matter. And I think that will help us in the future. Dense physical matter of certain vibratory rates, and only dense physical matter of certain vibratory rates are drawn towards certain etheric archetypes. Okay, now let's fix these few things off to a different, there we go. All right, this is due to the position in the body of the planetary logos, for instance, of any specific form. So we're talking about the quality of forms and their and the relation of that quality to conditions within the etheric body. So let's look at this again. We are talking about the quality of various dense physical forms and the relation of the quality of these forms to different conditions in the etheric body. Okay. And also, now, it gives to every form its particular quality, dependent upon the particular kingdom and nature which is being vitalized. Different etheric forms are connected with different kingdoms in nature. Or say, let's say distinctive. Distinctive etheric molds or forms or archetypes are connected with different kingdoms of nature. All right. Now, continuing the idea of the functions of the vital body. All right. So maybe I'll make that a little bit clearer up here. The functions of the vital body. All right. There's so much in the Tibetan's writings, scattered throughout the Tibetan's writings, are to be found interesting references on the vital body. The vital body is the principle of integration and of cohesive force of manifestation from the strictly physical sense. You know, the vital body holds all dense physical. Let's do that one too, if you don't mind. In the future, it always helps. So we'll say dense physical form, and then we'll also say dense physical forms. Dense physical forms, plural. Right. All right. So the vital body holds all dense physical forms together in an integrated state. And without the vital body, there would be no coherence in dense physical matter, because it is directed rather than directing. It's the leftover of a previous system and has and must be acted upon. It is not an originating source. All right, onward. This web of life is the subjective analogy to the nervous system. And, you know, we're familiar with the idea of the nadis. So here we have the subjective analogy to the nervous system. The nadis constitute the subjective nervous system. And beginners in the esoteric sciences can, if they remember this, picture to themselves a network of nerves and plexi, I suppose, running throughout the entire body, or the sum total of all forms coordinating and linking and producing an essential unity. The physical nerves interrelate all aspects of the dense physical body, and the subjective nerves or energy streams we call nadis sustain the outer nervous system. So we have to learn how to deliberately bring in energies from the nadis into our nervous system so that we can control the type of energy playing through our nervous system. But, you know, we've talked about the nerves being the coordinating system and standing in a way for the soul, the relation between the subjective inner man and the outer form, the dense form of bone and muscle and tissue. And this is the correlating factor. And so the nadis are involved both in correlation and in integration. The nadis of the etheric body are involved in both correlation and integration of the outer form. Integration, right. Correlation. Always leaving out one little letter, and I'm warned by the system it's misspelled. Okay, the vital body. Within that unity is diversity. The chakras are diverse and ruled by different rays and different planets. Just as the varied organs of the human body are interrelated by the ramification of the nervous system, this is an oft-repeated statement. All is interrelated by the nervous system. All organs interrelated by the nervous system. And probably you have felt that when you feel, let's say, pain in a particular organ, it may link and transfer that pain to yet another organ. Stomach and head, for instance, are related. The astrological squares tell us something about this. Throat and heart. Sometimes when people are having a heart attack, they feel the problem first in their throat. So the kind of sentiency transmitted by the nervous system works throughout the organic system and creates a felt, often felt, interrelation, but certainly a functional interrelation. So, just as the varied organs of the human body are interrelated by the ramifications of the nervous system, so within the body of the planetary logos are the various kingdoms in nature and the multiplicity of forms, the various kingdoms in nature being like chakras in the etheric body of the planetary logos, or any planetary logos, because kingdoms are not just found on our planet, but are system-wide. And the multiplicity of forms. We have major chakras, minor chakras, minute chakras, all of them distinctive, all of them well organized in categories, all of them ruled by different rays and different planets. It's a well-organized system about which we have to learn when we are treating, let us say, in a healing manner, the objective man into whom some form of disease has worked out from the miasmas that might be found in the etheric body, the precursors of external disease. Back of the objective universe is the subtler sensitive body, one organism, not many, one sentient, responsive, connected form. So he's dealing here with, this is about the unity of the solar systemic or cosmic etheric body. And so, interestingly, in the etheric body, ruled in part for us by Aquarius, we have diversity in unity, or unity in diversity, which is one of the major themes of Aquarius. Kind of interesting. We have the one and the many, and the one and both must be considered. I've written a song about that. Coming up soon in the Aquarius Solar Fire ritual broadcast. Very first song of the Aquarius Solar Fire ritual is Unity and Diversity. Well, we don't want to see an unrelated diversity. We don't want to be captivated by, as early consciousness is, by a diversity which cannot be related to the wholeness which contains it. We want that interrelation to be clear. All right. All of this is on the etheric body, and it's amazing how much is found, isn't it, in this introduction to a treatise on white magic. It's been so long since I've read it, but I realize, you know, that it is absolutely foundational. This sensitive form, it's not only the astral body that is sensitive, every type of form with its particular type of atoms is sensitive, and I will put that in. Every type of form with its particular type of atoms is sensitive, is not only that which responds to the environment, but is the transmitter from inner sources of certain types of energy, well, from anywhere really in the energy system, after a certain training, from anywhere in the energy system, high or low, from the soul, from the spiritual triad and its three major parts, from the monad itself. And the object of the treatise might here be stated to be that of considering the various types of energy transmitted to the form of the human kingdom. All right, that's an important statement. So we want to know what's coming through and what we can use, where it's from, how we invoke it, how the evocation follows. So the object of the treatise, considering the various types of energy, you know, is our etheric body filled with soul energy? Is it filled with emotional energy? Is it filled somehow with instinctual, rather physical energy transmitted from without, from the dense physical nature which has been absorbed by or aggregated on the etheric body. The responsiveness of the form to the various types of force, the effects of the force upon man and his gradual responsiveness to force emanating. So all of this is about this section is about the energies and forces we draw down or up and which affect our anchored life in the three lower worlds. Well, in the dense physical vehicle, primarily, our life in density. We have to handle that, but we have to know where the movements, the inspirations are coming from. So this is a very important thing, you know, what type of energies are we drawing in at any particular point, and how can we access that which we intend to access rather than being the victim of random energies which and forces which simply enter our etheric body, and impel our outer vehicle in certain directions. So, the object of this treatise might be stated to be that of considering the various types of energy and force transmitted to the form in the human kingdom, and then the responsiveness of the form to the types of force, the effects, and that would certainly involve esoteric healing, wouldn't it? The effects of that force upon man, and his gradual responsiveness to force emanating from. Now, these are the sources from which energy and force enters the human energy system. Oh, why not? I'm always seeing the opportunity to write abbreviations to save time for the future. All right, so this will be the human energy system. Right. So from the environment, plus this outer physical body, as I said, you know, it's not just from the subtle realms that force enters the etheric body. But force can enter directly into the physical body from the environment and also enter the etheric body. From the emotional plane or astral force, the majority of human beings at this time carry an etheric body which is filled with emotional force. And maybe this is why the emotional vehicle has been called the astral body, because the truly starry astral etheric body is so filled for the majority with emotional force. The mental plane or thought currents, egoic force, a force only registered by man and of which the fourth kingdom in nature is the custodian, and which has peculiar and mysterious and peculiar effects. It is, let's just say, once I get my red bracket here, it is not registered in general by the lower kingdoms. It's not, whoop, come. There must be a way to do this properly. Sorry for the slight delay. All right. So, why is that happening? Am I not able to bring this properly forward? All right, sorry for the delay here. Should be cut out, but you know, we're only human here, so we'll do what we can do. And this has to be read, and then it has to be copied, and then we have a hope that it will actually work. So the lower kingdoms of nature do not receive this force, but one wonders in the case of certain high domestic animals whether something which later will originate the causal body at individualization, will not be tapped. Of course, we know they don't have a causal body, but they do have a mental unit which is growing, and of course they also have the higher aspects which are not yet really linked with their outer expression. They do some wonderful altruistic things, and we read so much about human beings and even others being heroically saved by dogs, maybe by elephants. Other by dolphins. So there's some link to the forthcoming soul in these higher domestic animals. But anyway, and they are tending towards the fourth kingdom in nature, and some of these, I think it was Leadbeater that said some of these heroic acts, some of these apparently selfless acts really promote the onset of individualization. Okay, that type of energy which produces the concretion of ideas on the physical plane, and strictly spiritual energy or force from the plane of the monad. Now, where is the triadal energy? Maybe this example connects with triadal energy. But really, go as high into the energy system as you can, all the way to the monad, and eventually there will be in this vital electrical body the type of energy which comes from those sources. Now, obviously, if we really want to tap the energies of the spiritual triad and the monad, the Antikarana has to be built. Especially, I mean, if we want to tap them consciously. The life thread, of course, connects, and in a way, the monad is everything and is connecting from the highest to the lowest and is sustaining in incarnation the entire pilgrimage. But if we want to do this in a conscious way and really be aware of the energies coming through the etheric body, then our Antikarana building is necessary. Okay, so what we've just done is reviewed the different types of forces and energies which can enter the etheric body from without and from within. And you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to take an assessment of the kinds of energies which we detect within our vital electric field. I'm sure we could meditate on that, and people of our type detect mental energy, yes, and emotional energy, yes, and sometimes instinctual energy of appetite. What about the presence of soul energy? What about the presence of the energy of the abstract mind or the Buddhic realm or the spiritual will, getting less and less likely as we ascend, right? And the energy consciously appropriated of the monad, still less likely given our stage of evolution, but one is not to imagine that it cannot happen and that these forces cannot descend and be recognized. All right. So we're talking about responsiveness to inner and outer forces. Okay. Next, the different types of force can all be registered in the human kingdom. All, apparently. Even the very high forces. Some of them can be registered in the subhuman kingdom. Let's just say emotion. In the animal kingdom. Oop, that's angel kingdom. How'd that happen? Animal kingdom, angel kingdom, and all right. Well, that was the shock. I thought I'd get animal kingdom out of that. So let's try it this way. All right. In the animal kingdom. And the apparatus of the vital body in man is so constructed that through its three objective manifestations, its objective manifestations. What does he mean by that? The triple nervous system through the seven major plexi Okay. And the lesser nerve ganglia and the many thousands of nerves, the entire objective man can be responsive to. So, right. The vital body of man is so constructed that through its three objective manifestations, the triple nervous system, through the seven major plexi, through lesser nerve ganglia, the many thousands of nerves, we're also here in the dense physical body, the entire objective man, and by that we mean, I suppose, we mean the, okay, the, I always lose my bracket. The dense physical man. Okay. Can be responsive to the above mentioned types of force. Energies generated in and emanating from any part of the planetary etheric web. So a master can probably do this. The solar web of life, energies in the solar system. One would have to be, whoop. One would have to be highly developed, I think. You know, no, that's not it. I'm having a little trouble here this morning. Okay. Be highly developed. To reach out into the solar system for such influences. The different planets, can also be indicated here, and to these we are responsive. The constellations of the zodiac, which appear to have a real effect upon our planet, and which astrology is as yet the immature study. Okay, let's see, putting this nascent science in its place. Certain cosmic forces, it will be recognized later, play upon and produce changes in our solar system, and consequently upon our planet, upon all forms within that planetary life. This has been touched upon in the what? Okay, let's just see. This is I'm being held up today. It is the moon in Taurus. This has been touched upon in. Okay, if I do it this way and do the previous, I'll find something. Right. So this has been touched upon. All right, we can find that in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. All right, in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. I think it's best not to rush, which is what I've been kind of doing today because of the schedule. Not a good idea. In the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Okay. And then, to all of these, the planetary web of life is responsive, and when astrologers work in the occult way and consider the planetary horoscope, which cannot yet be done, we are told. We do not yet have this planetary horoscope. We do not yet have the planetary horoscope. They will more quickly arrive at an understanding of the zodiacal and cosmic influences. So, you know, the etheric body is multiply responsive, and to some very distant and for us subtle sources. I think that's the main point that we have here. All right. Now just reviewing just a little bit. So we're talking about what types of forces the human being can respond to. We've listed the macrocosmic forces from within the human being itself here. And now we're adding to it the planetary forces in the planetary, solar systemic, and even cosmic etheric web. So the transmission of these forces, their sources, their times, their seasons, all of that is a great study, and we will learn the kinds of energies and forces to which we can be responsive, the degree to which we can be responsive, and how we can put our responsiveness to use. Multiply, maybe it's multiply. No, multiply. Okay. The anima mundi is that which lies back of the web of life, and this is the normally considered the soul of the world, but especially the soul of matter, the non self-conscious soul. Okay. The latter is but the physical symbol of that universal soul. So here the anima mundi is being called the universal soul, and perhaps is being equated with the over soul. It is the outer and visible sign of the inner reality. It is as if the energy of Mercury, which represents all of these inner connections, is the outer and visible sign of some other great source, perhaps the wholeness of Jupiter, the embracing, inclusive, all-inclusive planet. It is the outer and visible sign of the inner reality, the concretion of the sensitive, responsive entity, this being the soul, or in this case, that would be a good thing to put in there, I guess, this morning. I'll find a way to abbreviate and save time, but don't rush as I am rushing this morning, otherwise time will be lost. All right. Which links spirit and matter together. So the etheric body, the etheric body is standing for the soul. The etheric body is the symbol of the soul which links spirit with matter. This entity we call the universal soul. Maybe, according to the words, it is scattered throughout the cosmos, not scattered, but pervading the entire cosmos. The middle principle from the standpoint of planetary life. But we are confining ourselves to the planet, and we are using such words as maybe say, planetary anima mundi. The anima mundi, of course, is far wider than that. Perhaps we can call this linking entity the planetary anima mundi. When we narrow the concept down to the human family, see how we work with the law of analogy in all of this? We go from one larger system to a smaller, and from the smaller to the larger, and are able to fill in the blanks and solve for X and Y, so to speak. When we narrow the concept down to the human family and consider the individual man, we call it, namely, the soul, the mediating principle. And we are calling also the etheric body a kind of mediating principle. Etheric body, too, is standing, presenting itself, or being presented, as a mediating principle. And interestingly enough, Mercury is that planet which is particularly the mediator and also the ruler of all the links and interconnections of the etheric body, and also the higher octave of Mercury, which is Uranus, must have as well a mediating faculty. Interesting about these higher octaves, you know, Neptune, higher octave of Venus, Uranus, higher octave of Mercury. Of what lower octave is Saturn, the higher octave. Okay. The mediating principle for the soul of mankind is not only an entity linking spirit and matter and mediating between monad and personality, which it does, but the soul of humanity has a unique function to perform in mediating between the higher three kingdoms in nature and the lower. And so, you know, we are very much, we of the human family, this seems to be my mourning for abbreviations. If you can live with this, I have to live with it. Let's call it human family. All right. So we of the human family are in a very fourth ray position, but ultimately a second ray position, and the soul ray of humanity will eventually be, we are told, the second ray and not the fourth ray as it is now. So the higher three are, between which we are, which is involved in this mediation, the higher three, the spiritual hierarchy of our planet, nature spirits or angels and human spirits who stand at a peculiar point on the ladder of evolution. Of these, Sanat Kumara, embodying a principle of the planetary logos, is the highest, embodying a principle. What principle? Related, perhaps, every time I choose a new abbreviation, I run into the same trouble. Embodying a principle, a second ray principle, perhaps. We're told sometimes Sanat Kumara is like the soul of our planetary logos. He's said to be so many things. Of the planetary logos is the highest. He's the highest example of the teaching ray on our planet. And an initiate of the first degree is the lowest, with corresponding entities in what we call the angel and deva kingdom. And that's fascinating. Because, you know, perhaps for every degree of evolution in the human kingdom, there is a corresponding degree in the angel kingdom or deva kingdom. Okay, so that's maybe the bottom of the consideration. Let's see, the hierarchy of rays, certain groupings of the seven rays in relation to our planet, these might be intraplanetary, or perhaps we are speaking of the seven spirits before the throne. And wouldn't that be a good one to do? So, seven spirits before the throne. Right. Just excuse me here for a moment. I'm having a little fun. And I hope it doesn't delay you too much. Have a chance to think about something. Seven spirits before the throne. I could put of God, but I think we get the idea. Okay. Right. Okay. And then a hierarchy of lives gathered by an evolutionary process out of our planetary evolution and from four other planets who embody in themselves the purpose and plan of the Solar Logos in relation to the five planets involved. Well, this is, let's just say that this is temporarily obscure. We could take a little time to try to work that out, but we might say, I wouldn't be surprised if Mercury and Venus and Vulcan are involved, and maybe the Earth and maybe Mars. But to work this, the correspondences out here, it would take quite a bit of time. So we have the rheli, we have the spiritual hierarchy. We also might have the rheli lives, possibly in Shambhala. They can be intra; those would be the intraplanetary ray lives. The seven spirits before the throne, within our planet, are before the throne of our planetary logos, and not before the throne of the solar logos. And then we have a hierarchy of lives. Now, normally, this little section here, I was thinking, this section might be holding a hint as to the nature of the creative hierarchies. Okay, to be found in the chart. Which chart is it? Okay, I'll try to find that here. There. This particular chart, I think it's page 35, 34, 35 of Esoteric Astrology. On page 34, 35 of Esoteric Astrology. Always the question is, what is the nature of these hierarchies, the lesser builders, the divine flames, and so forth? At least there are correspondences here in the chart we're seeing before us at the moment to the three orders of lives, which humanity is mediating or bringing into expression. Right. Okay. So this is, I've not seen this particular triplicity before. I'm used to thinking of the three higher kingdoms, perhaps. The kingdom of souls, the kingdom of planetary lives, and the kingdom of solar lives. So one wonders, and I'm just going to kind of put that down here as a possibility. One wonders also about the three kingdoms above the human kingdom. Namely, the kingdom of souls, the kingdom of planetary lives. Okay. Well, maybe not. Here we go again. And we'll put that in Kingdom of Planetary Lives and hope that that is remembered. Okay. And the Kingdom of Solar Lives. Now, you know, the Kingdom of Planetary Lives. And if I want to correct that properly, and I'm sorry for the delay, Kingdom of Planetary Lives. There we go. Replace, indeed, yes, 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 yes. And the Kingdom of Solar Lives. So, Kingdom of Solar Lives, and we don't have that. So, let's put that in, Kingdom of Solar Lives, which is the seventh kingdom. And humanity is the mediator there between these great beings, relatively great, and the lower kingdoms. So, we've been given a different perspective here. We've been told about a group called the Spiritual Hierarchy and Associated Beings, and it's very high, and Sanat Kumara himself might as well be the planetary logos, and then the Hierarchy of Rays, either intraplanetary or extraplanetary. And a hierarchy of lives, and I would gather that these are, we have to consider them solar systemic lives, gathered by an evolutionary process out of our planetary evolution and from four other planets who embody in themselves the purpose and plan of the solar logos. Well, as I say, this is an obscure reference and will take some real pondering. In narrowing the concept down to the microcosm, the ego or soul acts verily as the middle principle, connecting the hierarchy of monads with outer diversified forms, which they use sequentially. Now, you know, what have we got here? Monads, souls, and personalities. So these forms are used sequentially in the process of A, gaining certain experiences, resulting in acquired attributes, working out certain effects initiated in an earlier solar system, and our particular planet is very focused on this process. Our planet, the so-called hospital of the solar system, has a great connection with the energies built in the previous solar system. And the process of cooperating in the plans of the solar logos in relation to his, if one may use a pronoun in speaking of a life, which is an existence, and yet is an extended concept, karma, to his karma, a point overlooked. So we are busy in the process through our forms of working out not only planetary karma, we as human beings are working out not only planetary karma, but solar systemic karma. This karma of his must be worked out through the method of incarnation and the subsequent result of the incarnated energy upon substance and form. So we as souls are an, what can it be called, incarnated energy. Okay. This is symbolized for us, if we could but grasp it, in the relation of the sun to the moon. We are the solar lord in a way. We are the higher solar factor working out a inner destiny in lower matter, but also correcting the relations to be found within the lower three worlds in which incarnation occurs. The Solar Lord, with his warmth and light, galvanizes the moribund lunar lords into a spurious life, not a real one. This is the great deception and the Maya of his presence. We think that everything here is really alive, but it is in fact animated by the solar energy, and without the solar energy it would be moribund. So runs the old commentary oft quoted by me in earlier books. The above concept has in it truth for the individual soul as well. The Solar Lord, with his warmth and light, galvanizes the moribund lunar lords into a spurious life. This is the great deception and the Maya of his presence. So things are not always what they seem to be. All right. So we're narrowing the concept down to the microcosm. Okay. And we are inwardly the true points of life, the monads, and we have to relate intelligently and for a number of purposes to outer diversified forms. And we can only relate intelligently and coherently through the principle of the soul, which is the middle and intelligently coordinating principle, organizing the various factors found in the three lower worlds in such a manner that planetary karma is worked out, well, our individual karma is worked out, planetary karma, solar systemic karma. So what is the working out of karma? The adjusting of relationships so they more resemble the purposeful archetype found on the higher planes and are no longer stuck in the conditions which mistaken thought and action have inclined them to take. The conditions we find in the outer worlds are not archetypal yet, and they have resulted from our mistaken action and feeling and thought. They have resulted from our myopic action, glamorous desires, and illusory thoughts. And we have to restore them under the guidance of the soul to archetypal purity. And then the lower worlds, which I call the mosaic worlds, will resemble closely the design of the archetypes on the higher planes. All right, so we've narrowed the concept down to the microcosm. The middle principle is in process of revelation now. So this is the period, we might say. This is the period of human history in which the middle principle is being revealed to various individuals and initiates over the millennia and even millions of years. There was a revelation, but now to humanity, the world disciple, the revelation is in process. The lower aspect is functioning. That is our personality aspect. The higher remains unknown, that is the monad, but that which links them and at the same time reveals the nature of the higher is on the verge of discovery. So no man cometh to the Father except through me, says the Christ principle. No man cometh to the Father except through me, says the Christ principle. So the more we come into soul awareness, the greater possibility of the revelation of the essential being, the essential life we are. The structure of the mechanism is now ready. You know, there's been that slow building of the foundation under the third ray as relates to the personality. The structure of the mechanism is now ready and developed to its point of usefulness, and under the law of economy has to be used. The vital life that can guide and motivate the machine, and what is the machine? The machine is the outer objective man, is likewise present, orchestrating, organizing under the impulse of the soul. And man can now intelligently use and control not only the machine, but the active principle, you know, latent fire and active fire. Is that what it's called in cosmic fire? Or radiatory fire, perhaps. So this is going to be the renewed focus in the Aquarian Age. It was a kind of focus long, long ago in Lemuria, but now we can really use the relationship between the etheric body and the dense physical body to rebuild the world according to the archetypes found on still higher planes. So, the great symbol of the soul in man is his vital or etheric body, and for the following reason. So, it's here that we will stop, and we will say that this is the end of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 11, and we're on page 48, but I have no idea where we began. So my hope is that I can find it, you know. There it is. Page 44 to almost the end of 48. Well, it seems slow going, and the accumulation of knowledge is at first slow. He tells us that between the third and fourth initiation, there's a very rapid accumulation of knowledge. So let's work forward to that point so that we can be among those that accumulate with rapidity, the better to participate in what needs doing. And this will be the beginning of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 12, starting on page 48. Okay, friends, excuse my lapses during this presentation. Sometimes I start too late in the day, and I'm eager to make up for lost time, and haste makes waste, unfortunately. All right, back with number 12 as soon as it becomes possible to do so. But it is a wonderful book, and this introduction, revelatory, foundational. We're going to get into more particulars, perhaps, when we deal with the book per se, more particulars of the magical process, but DK is laying a more comprehensive foundation, which involves some degree of abstraction. Great stuff he's given us, great stuff, and may we assimilate it and use it wisely in anticipation in 7 years of the presentation of the third installment of his teaching, to be begun exactly when we don't know, and to last how long we don't know, and the method of presentation we don't know, but we have his promise that it's coming, so let us be ready for it. Okay.